VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
As always, we thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on VCY America. And friends, as you know, yesterday we did a news roundup program in order to make way for our guest today. You see, the matter of gender confusion across our land is really off the charts. I mean, from preschool on, children are being indoctrinated through drag queen story hours and through television programming that parents once thought was safe. Yes, even through public television. Now promoting lifestyles causing young children to become confused. Children are taught that you may look like a boy, but you might actually be a girl. Girls are taught you may look like a girl, but you may actually be a boy. Children are then celebrated for declaring that they're of a different sort and affirmed by society. And this confusion is only intensifying. Just look at the emojis that were just released of so-called pregnant men. I mean, girl sports right now are being decimated. This is the consequence of really ignoring the fact that God created male and female. But how do we deal with these matters with children? Many are running to medical professionals for puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones, and sadly, some are even following procedures to mutilate their own bodies. And this is coming down from the highest office of our land. Well, addressing these matters today, we welcome to Crosstalk Dr. Quentin Van Meter. He is president and interim and co-executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. He is a board-certified pediatric endocrinologist of some 44 years. He obtained his medical degree in 1973, his pediatric internship and pediatric residency at the Naval Regional Medical Center in Oakland through the University of California, San Francisco, and completed his pediatric endocrinology fellowship at the Johns Hopkins Hospital. He's engaged in his own full-time endocrine practice and has been campaigning around the world to educate healthcare professionals about the harm of affirmation of gender incongruences. And Dr. Van Meter, thank you for joining us here on Crosstalk.
Glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Could you sort this thing out for us? I mean, through the eyes of a pediatrician, what is going on?
Well, it is a very strange world indeed. I will tell you that in my experience in my fellowship at Johns Hopkins was interesting because the individual who decided that there was such a thing as a gender identity as a definable entity, it was Dr. John Money, a clinical psychologist. He's since passed away, but he was very influential in creating the idea that gender could be separate from biologic sex.
Wow.
And he did some experimentation on infants and toddlers who had what we call developmental disorders of sexual differentiation. These were very rare conditions of medical instances where the genital structures were not well formed at birth and were somewhat ambiguous. And so he played around with these families and decided which gender the child should be reared, whether it matched the biologic sex or not, and sent the families forward with that in their social agenda. And it turns out that the vast majority of those that were not congruent gender and biologic sex ended up returning to their biologic sex as they ended up growing older. In one particular sad case, one of the twin brothers involved committed suicide, and the other twin brother died of drug overdose in young adulthood. So his program also included treating adults who decided they were born into the wrong body and wanted to become the opposite sex, and he engineered hormone protocols and surgical interventions. He didn't do them himself, of course, since he was a clinical psychologist, but he developed contacts with colleagues who would do that. This was all experimentation without any informed consent or any oversight by ethical medical practice groups.
Mm-hmm.
So now in today's world, that kind of thing should obviously not happen. We should not be experimenting blindly just to see what happens to patients when we do things to them. We should be treating them within standards of care that have been established and scientifically verified, and that's not the case.
Yeah.
So here we are doing experiments, and it's essentially an idea that came from the ideas of John Money so long ago and has kind of blossomed and actually exponentially blossomed here in the United States.
Where is Johns Hopkins now on this issue?
Well, for the longest time, they were very embarrassed about the original circumstance, and they just kind of put it in the archives of failure and said it would never happen again. But they, about halfway through this surge of transgender treatment centers, they have resurrected Dr. John Money as a hero and have their own in-house transgender clinic where they bring these children in who don't have disorders of sexual differentiation. They now are just otherwise physically healthy boys and girls, adolescent males and females, who decide that they are unhappy living in the body that God created for them.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't the brain itself also programmed in the womb itself as to male or female?
Well, it is. The situation is that as the baby is conceived, there are the gonadal cell line is essentially established as either a male or a female, and the cells that develop in all the organ systems are programmed to respond to the eventual production of the male sex hormones or the female sex hormones as the body goes through childhood, and then hits the very important puberty, which is not a disease state per se. I mean, it's very tough to weather through it, as we all of us adults know, but it is a very important process to go through to become a fertile adult and a reproductive adult. So it has, the body is programmed from conception forward. There are over 6,500 cell types in the body that are expecting and programmed to receive the correct, biologically correct sex steroid hormones when they are produced by the gonads.
And surgery does not change that, does it?
No, surgery does not change that. Medicines do not change that. Mm-hmm. When you have an incongruity of medicines or hormone levels that are very much out of whack compared to what's expected for the biologic sex, you get definite disease states that happen as a result.
Well, the narrative, as you know today, is that we must affirm someone suffering from, I'll call it gender dysphoria. How do you address that issue, that we need to be affirming if a boy says, well, I really think I'm a girl, or a girl says, I think I'm a boy?
Well, the life, long-term solution to this, it's already been really carefully established in as many as 16-plus published studies internationally, and certainly from within the United States itself, several studies, show that if you counsel the child, because all of these children, literally, they have undercurrent emotional turmoil. It may not be definable exactly as specific anxiety or depression, but they all are at odds, and that itself is where things come from. It's a child who has experienced an adverse circumstance that is something as simple as a divorce of parents, a death of a sibling, a death of a pet, a frequent move from one community to the next. Sexual abuse in upwards of 60% of these kids by family members or strangers. These are all things that are adverse in the child's development of a sense of security. And so the child is in this quandary state beneath the surface. It may not show, but they then start having issues of how they get along with their peers, how they react to the environment, social environment at home and in school, and they start looking for a solution. And in the past 12 years, almost geometric in progression of ideas to search on the internet, when you are not happy, where do you go? And the very inviting, shiny object they see is, hey, I think I could be transgender, because all the transgender kids that they're talking about have the same feelings that I do. They don't like themselves. They don't feel loved or wanted or understood. They're not popular. They hate themselves in so many ways. They don't like the way they look. They wish they were beautiful and popular, and all their lives could be the most popular kids in school, and they're not. And so they find a real solace, just a false solace in these things online, saying, this is what's wrong with you, and this is how you solve it. and they hook up and start blogging with each other and sharing things on social media, and all of a sudden they have a phenomenally positive place to go in their lives. They can kind of shut the lights out, draw the blinds, sit in their room, get on their phone or their computer or tablet, and shut out all the things in their life that bother them, that are creating, that are still there, they're not going away. And they find a beautiful, peaceful place where everyone states they love them and respect them and think they're the best people on the planet.
Yeah.
Now, you know, what troubled kid is not going to go again and again to this well of hope and not live there and not want to go through that and say, hey, how do I get to this beautiful land of everything wonderful? Well, this is how you do it.
You know, it's amazing. We just heard a clip a week ago on this program. I think it was a Kansas teachers meeting where a Kansas teacher was actually talking about that they need to address these things in the classroom. 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds who have access to social media and with their cell phones as a 5- and 6-year-old, they're getting this. We have to be able to address this and really lead these children in that regard. I mean, through the lips of a teacher, really implanting this in the mind of a 5-year-old.
Well, the problem here is that there's an ideological agenda which it runs through the educational system and has really gained momentum over the past 30 or 40 years, where the school becomes the influencer of the child. The parents are excluded, and this all goes back to the theory of the original Society of Adolescent Medicine, which was established in the 70s. Which said we have to separate these poor suffering teenagers from their parents, from their parental influences, and we will get laws passed that says, hey, you can't discuss anything with the parent without the permission of the child, and dividing the child from the parent, separating them at physical exams and routine well checks in the pediatric offices to make sure that you could get to the child out of earshot of the parent and start planting ideas about sexual activity, about drug use and things like that, that you could talk about and find out what's going on and not share with the parent. And the parent could not know. It had to be kept in confidentiality for like an emancipated minor. And so this idea sprung up, and it's in state laws in every state about confidentiality for adolescents and whatnot, and it protects. It basically puts a wedge between the child and the family, and that was sort of the very beginning of this idea that the parents are the problem, and therefore the school is the answer in terms of indoctrination. If it weren't for the school indoctrination and it weren't for the social media, there would be essentially the same amount of transgender children that there were 50 years ago, which essentially is zero.
Mm-hmm.
This idea would not hold water or have any attractiveness if it weren't constantly reaffirmed. And these children were not being groomed online and groomed in the school.
Yeah, and it's happening, folks. And keep in mind, even for this present administration, who declared, even as running for the presidency, that the transgender matter, the transgender issue, is the civil rights issue of our time. We're going to take a quick break. Dr. Quentin Van Meter is with us today from the American College of Pediatricians. And folks, there's things happening on the national level as well, even before the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. We'll have more information after the break. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, creation seminar speaker at the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how many different types of animals did Noah take on board the ark?
Chris, detractors from the biblical flood story say that there were way too many animals to have fit on board the ark. But not so. Let's look carefully. First off, we need to recognize that most animals live in the ocean and would not have to be on board the ark. They would survive, at least in representative numbers, outside the ark. By the way, Noah didn't even have to take 2 of every species. The Bible says 2 of every kind, probably a broader category which might include a number of species, like the dog kind. Altogether, I suspect that there were probably less than 20,000 animals on board the ark. This was difficult for Noah, but not impossible. At least that's the way I see it from a Back to Genesis perspective.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
friends, the indoctrination is intense. It's happening on so many different levels. And as we played just the other day, also on Crosstalk, a clip here about President Biden telling teachers that when they're in the classroom, they are your children. They're your children. And that's what's taking place, friends. There's a lot of indoctrination. I'm thankful for Christian teachers that are making a difference in the lives of young people. That's not broadly all teachers, but there are those that are solely there for the purpose of indoctrination. We have played the clip of a Drag Queen Story Hour performer who said that they are there and grooming the next generation. And that is really a buzzword that's much at play here, Dr. Van Meter, and that is this grooming aspect. And there is a lot of that taking place in our society today.
Well, I tell you, I was very discouraged when I was sent a copy of an annual Christmas gala for the Gay Men's Chorus of Seattle.
Oh, yes.
They had a Zoom presentation, and their opening song, or I believe it was the opening song, but it was certainly a major feature of the show, was a montage of the individual singers, and the line that kept repeating is, "We are coming for your children."
Mm-hmm.
We are coming for your children. And that was repeated throughout the verses of this performance. I thought, are you kidding? That is so blatant grooming.
Yeah.
I was flabbergasted. But, you know, again, that went right by and, you know, without a bat of an eye from media or most other people who hadn't had a chance to hear that. So, wow.
Dr. Quinton Van Meter is our guest here today, president of the American College of Pediatricians. And the ACPED recently met with officials from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services pertaining to the gender identity rule. It's Section 1557 of the so-called Affordable Care Act. What is this rule, and tell us what your concern is?
The rule is that by federal edict, not by congressionally passed laws, but by a federal edict, that any physician who is licensed to practice and who would perform treatments with hormones must treat transgender children with the hormones that they request, regardless of whether or not they believe it's ethical or appropriate or harmful or whatnot. So there's a regulation that says you will do this. It is a right of the child and the family, and you will therefore do that. If you don't, there will be fines and potentially and certainly closing of the practice. So it scares, you know, all the physicians who don't want to comply with this, and I'm certainly one of them. Like, well, what will I do? That's my, you know, I use these hormones as an endocrinologist all the time in a very, very careful and appropriate manner that is FDA approved and which follows true standards of care.
Mm-hmm.
I will be forced to do something which I consider blatantly unethical and inappropriate and will harm children because the government tells me I have to. What will I do? Well, I'm going to stand up and talk as long as I have breath and as many places around the globe as I can to educate people about that. Will I break the so-called law of regulation? It's a regulation. It's not a law. I certainly might consider testing that if it does come to pass. But I would also hope to be a part of a legal battle against that issue so that it could be challenged in court. And the American College of Pediatricians had an opportunity to be part of a 45-minute presentation to Health and Human Services. It was a one-way presentation, that is, HHS people listened to us but did not comment.
Mm.
They could ask questions at the end, but they really didn't ask any questions when they were offered the opportunity to. So for 10 minutes of that presentation, I focused specifically on the adverse aspects of social affirmation and why it's adverse, the adverse aspects of medical treatment affirmation and its downsides and why, and finally the aspect of surgical affirmation and the downsides to that. And I said, why would we be regulated to do something that is outside a true standard of care and that has more harm than any potential benefit?
Yeah.
Proven by science already. And, you know, why would we want to do that? Why would we be regulated to do something like that? How can this possibly be? And some of my other colleagues addressed the mental health issues and the manpower issues that we would lose, you know, people in the practice of medicine who would just say, I'm out. I won't do this.
Right.
I can't do this. It does harm. I follow the Hippocratic principles of do no harm to my patients, and therefore I can't practice medicine anymore. So we are already short, you know, a number of thousands or 100,000 physicians projected by 2030, and that number would increase dramatically.
We'd
have healthcare, access would be severely limited.
I mean,
we gave all these, you know, ideas to HHS members.
Mm-hmm. And we saw exodus of those in the medical profession, doctors and others, due to the whole COVID policies. And this would be another one of these things being forced upon the medical profession that there are many who said, we're just not going that direction. I would step out before I would actually comply with this. I mean, you've actually said that this rule is dangerous for kids.
Yes. It is unequivocally harmful.
Mm-hmm.
It is played against the false narrative of there is a proven risk of increased risk of suicide completions in patients who are not affirmed completely across the span of their life. And what we do know is that that's absolutely an untruth of incredible proportions, because the studies that they, and there are only a few studies, because there's only two population studies that have been actually published. And by a population study, it means every single patient within that group that was counted, not people who answered convenience sample surveys online by, you know, ideologic groups such as the Trevor Project or the Transgender Consensus Association.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is the Swedish studies. There are two of them that were published, one in 2011, which said there's a 20-fold increase in suicide completions, not attempts or ideation, but absolutely, you know, dead people who, because of their affirmation, compared to the standard society in Sweden itself. Sweden being a very, very, very progressive, socially progressive, accepting, environment for these individuals in their lives. That was published in 2011, and immediately was, you know, just torn to shreds as a terrible, terrible study. The authors were actually sort of pressured and badgered into saying, well, we didn't really mean to say what we found.
Yeah.
So that study is irrefutable, but has been, you know, the object of derision from the ideologues who don't like it. And then more recently, there was a study, again, of the entire population of Sweden at the time, over time, and these are retrospective analyses. They're not. No one has ever done a study where they start at ground zero and put half of the kids into one pathway, which would be the counseling and discovery of mental health issue way to go. The one that's been proven to solve this problem in 80 to 90% of all the kids that have ever grown up through it. Okay, that's already been shown by itself, but it's never been compared and one on one with the same population moving forward to being studied and analyzed at the same intervals, the same criteria of success or not success, and to move that forward. That would take about 30 years to 40 years to do, to come to completion, and it would involve, you know, the things that we know happen if you do medical and surgical affirmation. You sterilize the patient. There is no ethical body of governance that would say, well, I'll allow you to do a study on people whose gonads are perfectly functional and would work as an adult, and we're going to remove them and sterilize the patient. There's no way to do a study like that because ethics prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the committees for human subjects would say, are you out of your mind? We're not
even going to
give the light of day to
this. And yet we're told constantly that unless we are affirming and go down this direction and give, you know, the puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, et cetera, unless we do that, we're going to put them on a suicidal path.
And that has not ever been proven, okay? This is giving a child who wants something, you know, just so emotionally charged that they'll say anything and do anything
mm-hmm.
to get it. And they are adolescents with a brain that cannot forecast what it would be like to be an adult without sex organs at work, or, unable to conceive and bear children. What does a 14-year-old know about the joys of breastfeeding? There's no connection at all with reality in adolescence. What's happening the next minute or at most tomorrow. And this is lifetime that we're talking about. And so they imagine, and they're groomed online to say, what you need to understand is that you're going to kill yourself if you don't get this. You're going to die. You're going to die. We know you're going to die. We have studies that show that these people kill themselves all the time because the mean doctors won't give them the hormones or let them to have the surgery or let them use pronouns. Okay. Oh my gosh. If you, and they're told that. I mean, it's just repeatedly. If you repeat a lie enough times, people begin to certainly believe it. And it's happening not only within the medical community, but it's certainly out there in the lay press and all over the internet, everywhere you look.
What is your advice as a pediatrician to parents who are told by school officials you need to use those choice pronouns, the pronouns that if it's a boy, use the she, her, or whatever. And they said that'll be affirming for your child, and parents are afraid, I'm going to lead my child on a wrong pathway if I'm not affirming of them. Your advice as a pediatrician?
Well, it is already established in published studies by Dr. Kenneth Zucker, who is really the godfather of gender identity disorder, as it was called previously.
Mm-hmm.
He understood very well that even social affirmation creates an opening of a Pandora's box. The child, quote, comes out as somebody who identifies as the opposite sex, and that child immediately experiences a tear in the fabric of life, a huge tear. Those who believe it's the right thing to do and those who are absolutely flabbergasted by it. And most people are quietly flabbergasted, but they're afraid that if they say so, they're going to be, called bigots and haters. So they just keep their mouths shut and amongst themselves kind of moan and mumble and say, are you kidding? So the child immediately rips the family in shreds by doing this. The relationships with siblings are really incredibly disturbed. The parents are disturbed. Most often in the kids that I see in my practice, the parents are divorced and they are playing a game with each other, and the child is puppeting their parents by making all these requests and demands. And they pit one parent against the other, and they take it to court, and the child is the center of attention. And no child, doesn't like that idea that they are the most powerful person that they know. So this basically is hard to put back together again. If a child goes as far as pronouns and appearance, appearance is one thing. I mean, a haircut grows out. And clothes can be changed, but identifying their inner person with pronouns, it is reversible technically. You can go back and say, that's not me, I was just in a phase. But, who is going to, kids are not very trusting of things that seem out of sorts. And so they're going to say, well, wait a minute, who are you then? If, you thought you were a girl and you're really a boy, but now are you really a boy? What are you? What's mm-hmm. wrong with you? And so friendships will stay forever skeptical in the vast majority of cases. If a poor kid can't mend the life back together, it can happen. It's an incredible amount of emotional work.
Doctor,
so in that sense, it's reversible in terms of turning that around, but the emotional trauma in doing so, Dr. Zucker said, it's harmful to even consider doing that in the first place.
Dr. Quentin Van Meter, our guest here today, will be back in 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on VCY America.
Is it okay to abort a baby? People give many reasons why abortion is an acceptable choice. The inconvenience of pregnancy. Infant disabilities. It's the woman's body. It's not a baby. This is a result of rape or incest. Incompetence of parents. And she's not ready to be a parent. In the DVD, 7 Reasons, Ray Comfort addresses these 7 questions, reasoning with college students and people on the street about whether such objections are justified. You will see those who are ardently pro-choice change their mind in moments. This powerful 42-minute DVD, 7 Reasons, is available for a donation of just $5, 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25. Call 1-800-729-9829. Ask for the DVD, 7 Reasons.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. With us today, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, president of the American College of Pediatricians. Dr. Van Meter, I'm sorry, but you better give us a word about American College of Pediatricians, because you're not quite sounding like the AMA or another pediatric group here in this nation. You've got some stark differences, but I so appreciate the values that you're speaking out on behalf of.
Well, the American College of Pediatricians' whole existence is to sort of counter the ideologues that who have crept into organized medicine. So the professional societies that everyone sort of hears about as, hey, this represents the opinion of all those who are pediatricians or all those that are internal medicine or cardiologists or OBGYNs or whatever their practice is. They have professional societies that had been organized long ago to advocate for the patients, and then along comes the politics of how do we survive and practice in the when government intervention or government supervision, and they start branching off into sort of political ideologies to ostensibly protect the patients and the physicians so that they can practice ethically. Well, the politics wins over, and these organizations have been essentially hoodwinked and smuggled back into the arms of the very progressive ideologues. And essentially all the professional societies that you've heard of, that you're familiar with, the American Academy of Pediatrics and the American Academy of Family Practice, the AMA, the Endocrine Society, all of these groups have essentially been taken over and are into very progressive liberal ideologies that they apply to and subscribe to. So they don't represent the pediatricians as a whole. They just represent the ideologues who are in power. It's a very, they live well. They pay themselves well. They do some very nice things for the membership. The American Academy of Pediatrics has a very strong continuing medical education program that has seminars all throughout the year and major annual educational meetings. But within those meetings are embedded the ideologues and in our case, the transgender advocate, affirmation advocate lectures. These organizations will not present the side that we're on. They will not allow us to speak. They will not allow us to exhibit booths and any of our programs. Our American College of Pediatricians would be shunned and unable to exhibit in their national meeting because they don't want any contrary opinions.
Yeah.
So that happens at all the professional organizations that have been taken over by the ideologues. The Endocrine Society made some guidelines back in 2009 and published them, and they were made by a group of about 10 individuals, all of whom were strong ideologues and pro-trans affirmation, half from Europe, half from the United States. And they put together some what they called guidelines, and they admitted there was no science behind them, but they published them, and that became a symbol of acceptance by all endocrinologists in the United States.
Wow.
And perhaps the world, that these were the standards of care for these people. They're anything but standards of care. Standards of care need to be, essentially by definition, a consensus of a broad spectrum of opinion where everyone comes to one place and just hassles it out and wrestles it out and comes out with 10 principles they can all agree on in the middle. Those are standards of care. Guidelines are the opinion of an individual or a group of individuals that just wants to get their word out on the street. These guidelines have been accepted or promoted as standards of care. They're said over and over again that they're standards of care. The ideologues say that all the mainstream medical professions are in favor of all of these affirmation concepts, and that only outlying fringe crazy people of conservative, hyper-religious, folks, they're the ones that are sitting on the wild west fringe and who don't belong and don't represent much of anybody, certainly not the majority of physicians. Nothing could be farther from the truth. And so these things are brought up in court cases, that how would you go against the American Academy of American Academy of Pediatricians, AAP? Well, we are the American College of Pediatricians, mm-hmm. and we are staunchly against ideology. We stand for what is best for children based on science. We look for the good of the child, not at the expense of the whims and the wants of the adults.
Yeah, and
that's how we focus.
And that's what's so amazing is because how many times, even from this administration, do we hear, follow the science, we follow the science, follow the science, and yet they continuously deny the science when it comes to this issue.
Right. They basically bring up pseudoscience. And what I mean pseudoscience is that they design publications that prove their point by carefully selecting data and presenting only parts of it and misrepresenting it so that they can come up with a conclusion that says they're doing the right thing. And then they quote that article and requote it and quote it and requote it and quote it and requote it. And it, the next thing you know, it becomes, quote, science. And it's really not at all.
Friends, let me give you their website. It is acpeds.org. That stands for American College of Pediatricians. A-C and then PEDS, P-E-D-S.org. Let's open our phone lines here today on Crosstalk. If you have a question you'd like to ask of our guests, 1-800-733-9829. That's 1-800-733-9829. I'm confident that all these other organizations that you mentioned, they're not allowing the stories of sex change regret to be coming forward, are they?
No, that's another strong point, is that they state emphatically that any detransitioning is a myth, that it never happens. Okay, mm-hmm. Now they kept all of the detransitioners, which are at a conservative estimate 10% of adults that we know of that transitioned and are now detransitioning. They keep them quiet in fear. They threaten their lives. They're on the blogs where they try to talk about this. They are essentially told, "You shut up, or we're going to come and kill you." I mean, that's actually happens. And so it takes a very, very strong-willed, brave individual who's detransitioned. In the first place, think of it as somebody who's made that decision and voluntarily destroyed their body and created themselves as an infertile, medically fragile adult who needs constant medical care for the rest of their life that they wouldn't have otherwise needed. And they are just as depressed as they were before they got started with this, thinking that, and they have to admit, I made a mistake. So that's a huge step, and many of them basically just quietly exit the world by taking their own lives, and they don't get reported because no one really knew about what was going on or understood, and that just gets reported as a death from, you know, infection or something else, but no one is looking at the mortality of these people. They did publish a study saying that transgender individuals' lifespan is cut in half by affirmation. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't say why, but they just sort of found that statistic interesting. So, you know, the folks that are coming back are not allowed to speak in standard, you know, media arenas. They have to publish their own books. They have to blog. There is some traction now that some of these are very eloquently, stating their case. And it's there's a lot online to find if you go Googling around. However, you know, with the tech media folks, you know, screening what is good and what's not going to be seen, the detransitioners find themselves at the bottom of the heap if they can be online at all. And so their voices are squashed in many, many ways. But they're telling a story. Don't do this. This is not the answer.
Doctor,
I thought it was. I was told it was, and it's not.
We've got our lines packed with individuals wanting to talk with you. Let's begin in Glasgow, Kentucky. And, Eddie, you're on the air.
Thank you, Jim, for taking my call. I enjoy your program so much. This subject matter today, we're made in the image of God. So basically all we're doing is just marring the image of God. That's mm-hmm. pretty much it in a nutshell, I think.
Yeah.
The Bible talks about woe to him that strives with his creator. And that's pretty much about what it is. But I'm glad, praise God, I've been a man for 68 years. I knew I was a man just about as soon as I had any sense at all. And, you know, it's not as easy now. These children nowadays, they have to run the gauntlet. They have to listen to all these lies, mm-hmm. all of this indoctrination, all of this question creation.
Yeah.
We live creation went to evolution, so I don't know what the end result is going to be.
Eddie, thank you so much. And I know we're kind of going down a trail here, but let me just say this, Doctor. I mean, here we have young people, children taught to respect their teachers. And when all of a sudden their teacher pulls out a book, you know, that I Am Jazz or some other book here that promotes transgenderism here, and they're told to respect their teachers and their teachers are teaching them the truth, what confusion that provides for a child. Thank you, Eddie.
They're very soft and vulnerable, and they're wanting to be approved of. They certainly want to get good grades and bring them home. And mm-hmm. So what teacher says, they're going to kind of hold that as the opinion that's most important versus something they might hear at home or that they might have heard as a sermon in church.
Yeah. We've got Robert calling from Gaithersburg, Maryland. Robert, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Here in Maryland, there are laws that prevent counselors from being able to treat minors for gender identity. Are you able to get some of those counselors to speak with national law firms like Alliance Defending Freedom so that we can get a case to overturn that law?
Robert, thank you for this. And we're seeing this happen in communities all across the country, the ban on so-called conversion therapy, they're calling it. Doctor.
Right. It's very interesting. They've chosen the words very carefully to win their concept, because conversion therapy is thought to take something that's innate and natural and try to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Well, since gender is not innate in that, sex is the natural part. The conversion that's going on is actually taking a biologic male and trying to make them appear or feel as if they were a biologic female. That is conversion. And if we took the laws literally, we should be able to say, well, then it's against the law to do medical and social and surgical affirmation of the child. But they word their legal limits very, very carefully so that they turn the tables upside down and play the game backwards and try to win. And the ADF, the Alliance for Defending Freedom, is certainly on the side of the counselors who have been delicensed or criticized or fined. And so there's a wonderful plethora of legal pro bono stuff that is available to these individuals and the families that have been harmed.
And I know also Liberty Council with Matt Staver, they've had some victories, and this often happens community by community or a state by state situation where they are. And if there are issues going on, Robert, with counselors there, you know, reach out to Liberty Council or another group to have them pursue that. And like I say, there's been some case law that Matt Staver's been involved with that have given them victories, I believe, in some of the school districts in the state of Florida on this issue.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Tell you what, we're going, we're just 10 seconds from a break, so we'll quick take the break and come back to more of your phone calls in the final segment. So stay with us. With us today, Dr. Quentin Van Meter, who is president and also interim co-executive director of the American College of Pediatricians. Their website is acpeds.org, acpeds.org, acpeds.org. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum put out his first book called The Great Reset. It should be called The Great Collapse, because it's really about how they're going to collapse the industrialized civilizations of the world. His next book that just came out is entitled The Great Narrative. That should really be called The Great Lie, because what he's stating is that what's damaging the world is the free market system. And he goes on to declare that we are on the edge of ending civilization and the world as we know it due to climate change. They used to call it global warming, but then when we had cooling cycles, they had to change the narrative to climate change. And of course, this has all been proven absolutely false. There is no such thing as man-made climate change that is so disruptive as to need to destroy the free market system. Notice what I said, man-made. It comes from the sun, largely. My friends, the great lie is we need to get rid of the free market system.
You're tuned to Crosstalk on VCY America, gender dysphoria. We're talking about transgenderism. We're talking about the indoctrination that's going on, the puberty blockers, many, many issues. Dr. Quinton Van Meter with us has been practicing for some 44 years and is taking your calls here today on Crosstalk. Holding the longest has been Don in Pensacola, Florida. Don, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Jim. Dr. Van Meter, if the school is the answer to these children's problems and not the parents, why the increase in the shootings and the suicide rates way up there?
Well,
it's a great question. I think it's if when the family is taken away from the child, it's to the detriment of the child,
yeah.
Detriment of society.
Yeah, indeed. And we've heard that, again, come from the president, you know, as far as when they're in the classroom, they're like your children. Truly troubling. Philip in Richland, Washington, you're on the air.
Yes. Philip Gordon.
You're on the air, Philip.
Thank you. And in the 1970s, I was suffering from a anger management, and I went to the Mid-Atlantic Training Committee in North Carolina. It was in the 1970s, and we formed a group of 16 people who are charged with only talking about our feelings, not our head stuff. And in the group were two, obviously, homosexual and one a lesbian. And both of these were healed. And the process was very difficult for them, but it was found that they had the parents that had unreasonable expectations for their lives, and they did not realize that. And when they realized it, they actually called the guy's parents, got him out of business, and he talked to him on the phone and said, "Dad, I love you, but I cannot meet your expectations." And he was healed. And then the same day, the same meeting, that took about an hour. And the next same day, the gal who was a lesbian, she was crying through this whole thing. And she did the same thing, and she was healed.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Philip. And for those suffering from gender dysphoria, don't most kids grow out of this, doctor?
If they are, you know, if their medical, their mental health issues are dealt with in reality. And by that, I mean, this is a deep dive. You don't just say an interview with the child. You separately interview the parents, the step-parents, the siblings, the step-siblings, the half-siblings. Anybody that lives in the environment where and affects the child needs to be evaluated for their relationship to that child. The child needs to be surveyed for the adverse childhood events. There's a very simple questionnaire that pediatricians have that allows them to do that. And they get a score, and children with a high score, certain height of a score, need to be essentially counseled, and the adverse childhood events need to be addressed and discovered and counseled around. And that is what makes everyone well.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Elizabeth in Tennessee. You're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to make a comment.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to encourage parents to read God's holy word to their children.
Mm-hmm.
This will help them.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And indeed, and that's why we even began with Scripture reminding us from Genesis 1 that God made them male and female. Beth in West Dallas, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, I have three quick points, one of which is I know there is genetic abnormalities, you know, with any birth of a child or any being. So, I mean, there are some things that need to be addressed in that area. However, you never used to hear any of this. I know we have media now that spews all this stuff out, but, it was at one time just 1% or so of people that wanted to be homosexual. And now you find that it's up to 6% or more, I hear, because what's happening is that the LGBTQIA, they want to recruit children into this lifestyle or questioning themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And, the other thing is, too, is that, the suicidal rate for homosexuals has always been high to begin with because it's not a lifestyle that's calming, let's put it that way. And there's a lot of violence in it. You see the pretty pictures on TV and everybody's love is love. But you know what? This is child abuse. That's what this is. Programming them and talking to them and giving them all this questioning about themselves in school and having this library, transsexual business and all this kind of stuff. It's child abuse. And I just don't understand why the adults haven't stood up before now and said, enough already. No, not in my lifetime.
Yeah. Thank you, Beth. Appreciate your comments. Doctor, is this child abuse from eyes of a pediatrician?
Well, it is. It's certainly abusing children, and it's a willful effect on the child based on what you believe in. If somebody was of a particular religious faith and said your fifth finger on each hand must be amputated for you to be, you know, revered and appreciated and loved by your God, and the people in that religious belief section, you know, had all of their children's fingers cut off, they would be sent to, the county defect services,
yep,
because that is, absolute abuse, unquestionably. So, I mean, this is another form of doing something that's based on an ideology, but that is known to cause harm.
We're going to squeeze one last call in. Jeannie from South Dakota, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just wanted to share with you guys, I no longer have kids in high school, but I'm from a community of about 20,000, and just within this last week, a foreign language teacher that taught both of my kids every year assigns the students a foreign language name according to their sex at birth. And this is the first year where he was approached not only by one but four students that he's teaching this year, and they refuse to have a name according to, in fact, one of them is a furry. And so there is a lot of uproar going on. You can't wear baseball caps, but you can wear collars with spikes on them.
Yeah.
There's just so many things. So I just lifting up these people that do take a stand. And he wrote a letter to the
student. Tell you what, Jeannie, I'm almost out of time, so I'm going to have to stop you right there. And forgive me for doing so, but I want, Doctor, for you to talk about this furry aspect, too, because there are now children that are identifying as animals. And what do we do with this? I mean, we've got 30 seconds left. Go ahead, Doctor.
Well, it's essentially just an extension of the sort of bizarre thought processes that said you can decide what you're going to be or who you're going to be. And so we're going to have a plethora of pirates and wardrobes and spare tires that are going to be walking around looking like human beings. And being expected to allow them to do that. And it's like, I'm sorry, there is a limit, and the limit should start right at the very beginning, because if you open that door, as you can see with furries and other things, you've got Pandora's box wide open.
Folks, let's just begin with truth, okay? Let's just stick with the truth, and that'll take us a long way. Dr. Quinton Van Meter with us, ACPEDS, acpeds.org. Doctor, thanks for carving out the hour and joining our listeners and our time here today.
Happy to have done it. Looking forward to another chance as well.
Dr. Quinton Van Meter, again, folks, check out the website. Lots of information on this issue. Thanks for staying with us, being informed, and joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.